The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
You want some bad news, Michael?
No.
What are you asking me?
You're the guru of the gray matter. I figured if anybody had it, you'd have the answer.
I can't give you any direction.
I think I'm going to have to change this channel. I'm sorry.
You're completely wrong.
I refuse to be wrong on two calls in a row.
Tell me I'm spot on or tell me I'm crazy as I'll get out.
I have no idea.
I have a six-month-old, so we'll be raising him according to Dr. Ray.
Talk about being a winner.
So, you want my question?
You ain't making any sense.
You're absolutely right. I just needed confirmation.
So what are you going to do about it, Dawn?
I'm calling you.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Very nice to have you with me on The Doctor Is In. The variant of this particular Doctor Is In is Look Back Friday. My intrepid producer man and magniloquent editor, Andrew Krucek, puts together calls from previous programs. And he usually cuts out my badinage, as he puts it, my persiflage, in the beginning, and we go straight to the call, which I think many people would wish we would do anyway. So we've got some calls up there to get to on this Look Back Friday, and I comment a little further on it. We run the call in its edited form, and then I go off in some direction that I couldn't go off on the original, or there's something that needs clarification, or this does happen, where I listen to the call, and I think, well, I could have done that better. But that's only about 90% of them. The other 10% I feel pretty confident about. NYU professor Jonathan Haidt, H-A-I-D-T, published a book, The Anxious Generation. Instant number one bestseller. His central claim is that the absolute universal use of smartphones by kids is driving their rise in anxiety and depression. Okay. Now, he's got some critics. One professor, a woman named Candace Odgers, a professor of psychology at the University of California, Irvine, wrote in her review for Nature that correlation is not causation. You know, you understand that? That means, okay, the rise in kids' anxiety and depression is associated with much higher phone use through social media and internet searches, all of that. Doesn't mean it causes it. Okay, so let's go in a little bit. See what's happening here. In the Atlantic, a fellow named Derek Thompson said that the rise in psychiatric problems among young people isn't really happening, this is interesting, outside the English-speaking world. I've got my own speculations on some of that, but we'll see a little bit more of what they're saying. For example, they found no rise in anxiety among kids in Spain, Greece, or Russia over the same time period that the rates in the U.S. were skyrocketing. Even though the kids in Spain, Greece, and Russia are just as likely to possess smartphones. Okay, now I'm not going to read any further on this. I'm just going to see where this goes. But I would speculate, I'd say, well, it is something about American culture, whether we're so materialistic, whether our families are so fractured, whether we're just shedding religion at a torrid pace. There's something about our culture that makes these phones and kids traveling through that universe particularly vulnerable. Let's see what the article says. I'll quote it. Maybe what's really driving the rise in anxiety and depression isn't the smartphone itself, but a changing American culture, a youth culture that is now much more toxic, there's that word, than it was 15 years ago. Who wrote this article here? Who's this guy? Leonard Sachs. Okay. Leonard Sachs is I believe, a Christian, and he's pretty well known in traditional religious circles. He says, this is the argument I make in my book, The Collapse of Parenting. He says that the problems that American kids are experiencing are not solely due to smartphones per se, but to an increasingly toxic American youth culture. He says the smartphones and social media spread that culture, but he maintains that the smartphones themselves are not the main source of toxicity. It's okay, so what is? He says, I've been a medical doctor in the U.S. for 38 years ago. As recently as 28 years ago, the culture was much less harmful to children. So we ask the question, what's happened in the last 15 years that's made the culture so much more noxious for children? He says it boils down to three things. The collapse of parenting. I agree with him wholeheartedly on that. The culture of disrespect. Very true, very true. And normophobia. Let me see what, I want to see what he means by normophobia. Well, he makes this comment on the culture of disrespect. American culture has become a culture where it's cool to be disrespectful. And it's not just confined to politics. From the Disney Channel to the most popular videos on TikTok, the top 10 songs on Billboard, American kids are now immersed in a culture that teaches them that it's cool and even funny to be disrespectful. Yeah. Well, that's very true. Okay, hold on a second. Normophobia. I like this. He says, 15 years ago, I wrote a book called Girls on the Edge. The girls I interviewed back then wanted to seem effortlessly perfect. When I wrote the revised edition more recently, I found that girls no longer want to seem endlessly perfect. They don't want to seem perfect or even normal at all. Normal is boring. Better to be on the spectrum, or at least anxious or depressed or gender confused. A psychiatric diagnosis can provide an avalanche of excuses curated by TikTok influencers with millions of views. You're not lazy. You have ADHD. You're not shy. You have anxiety disorder. It's not something you control. It's not your fault. The term normophobia, which means fear of being normal, basically, was used by a woman named Mary Harrington to describe the growing fear of being normal in our culture. Ooh. In this new culture, he says, today's online culture, there's almost nothing worse than being white, straight, and neurotypical. Ooh, okay. Yeah, that's very true. I see those terms. Who wants to be typical? It's so boring. Normophobia means unimaginative, passive, lame. Normophobia incentivizes healthy people to think of themselves as sick. I got to close up with a quote here from C.S. Lewis. He wrote this 70 years ago. The trouble about trying to make yourself stupider than you really are is that you very often succeed. Leonard Sachs says this. Substitute more anxious or more depressed for stupider, and you begin to understand what is happening with American kids. The collapse of parenting has set kids adrift in a newly toxic culture in which it is now cool to be anxious and depressed. A culture in which it is totally lame to be normal. He says smartphones and social media may exacerbate the problem, but smartphones are not the root cause of the problem. We as parents need to limit the phones and the screens, not primarily because they're intrinsically evil, but because they are spreading a toxic culture, the culture of disrespect and normophobia. Well, yes, but that's to me, that's a little bit of playing with words, because if this is fueling our kids' rise in pathologies, he's saying that the phone itself isn't bad. Of course not. It's a technology. But what it allows children to be exposed to, what it feeds them, is pathological. Well, it's an interesting article. Leonard Sachs is kind of a well-known guy in conservative family circles. I'm Dr. Ray.
How would you like to celebrate the Divine Mercy at the Shrine of the Divine Mercy in Poland on Divine Mercy Sunday? Well, you can. Steve Ray here, inviting you to join us in Poland as we follow the footprints of John Paul II, Maria Faustina, and Maximilian Kolbe. Daily Mass at the most iconic, beautiful churches and delicious local foods. Join us in April for Divine Mercy Sunday in Poland.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net. Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Isn't it awesome that we today do not recognize his presence in the Eucharist? Is it because we really don't go to him in humbleness of heart and say, Lord, I don't believe, help my unbelief. Lord, I want to see you. I want to recognize you. I cannot live without you. Are we saying that?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Grindy. This is the variant of The Doctor Is In. It's our typical Friday variant. Look Back Friday. We're in the capable hands of editor and producer man Andrew Krucek. We take previous calls. Some of them go back a couple months. We review them a little bit, and then there's more for me to talk about. Oh, there always is more to talk about. Obviously, this is not therapy. But let's see. Oh, Michael from New York has a situation that unfortunately happens a fair amount when siblings are put in a position to mutually satisfactorily divide up an inheritance.
So my grandparents died in the 1950s,
and they left over 500 acres. When my mom, the last surviving of nine aunt and uncles, passed away, went to my father, her husband. When he passed away in 2017, there was no will. My aunts tried to sort it all out, okay? They just couldn't. But my brother-in-law, who's a farmer and has horses, paid my father the property tax, which was about $500 a year, but he made money off of it, the hay and everything. Well, 5 years go by, we found out the place was up for sale, and we thought, how is that possible? So my cousin, whose husband is a lawyer, looked into it, got the Freedom of Information Act. They lied on the Supreme Court, basically told the courts that they didn't know the whereabouts of me or my sister or their cousins. And my dad wasn't even cold in his grave back in 17. We thought it went to property tax and maybe they claimed it back from the government. No, they lied. They got the place under fraud. So we got I'm almost done here. We hired a civil lawyer. It cost us $7,000, who looked into it and said, yeah, it was fraud. But he wants another $20,000 to stop the sale. And all my other cousins walked away. He said, but you do have an option. You can go criminal. You can go to the police. I'm meeting with the police next week. And they said, well, we'll look it over. We think we could. But I'm heartbroken. Do I really want to charge my sister? Now, we come from a close family. There's me and two older sisters. She's a retired school teacher. I don't come from a dysfunctional family. But I'm heartbroken and sore of my cousins that my sister would do this. My brother-in-law for my other sister is furious. How could your sister do this? It's like, sister, I never knew you. And they were all supposedly Catholic. Do I just let her, they can choke on the money, get the land? Or do I pull the trigger? Because, I mean, we're already estranged. She put a restraining order on all of us through the lawyer. She didn't even come to bat. I don't know what to do at this point as a brother of hers and also as a Catholic, and maybe you can give me some input.
Well, you said something significant there, Michael. Your brother said to or about his sister, I don't even know you, correct?
My brother-in-law. Sister, there's me and two older sisters plus cousins. The cousins, when the civil lawyer said it's going to be another $20,000 and I can take this to civil court, stop the sale because it's fraud. They walked away. They said, you know what? We thought they'd come. This was just a letter of intent that we sent to my sister.
So they didn't want to mess with that. But your sister's digging her heels in.
Well, my sister texted me once and said that dad gave up the property tax to us. And I said, that doesn't mean you can steal the land. He never. And then when I said that one of the cousins wasn't going to go to the police, their lawyer called my lawyer and put a restraining order on any of us calling her. And now they took the sign for sale down. And I thought, okay, maybe they're going to reconsider. Well, I was home at the cottage last week, and my other brother-in-law, because I have two sisters, said to me, the for sale sign's back up. So I'm meeting with the police next week. It's up to me now. I either let it go or I lay if I lay a police charge, I'm very close to my nieces who are in their 40s, like my sister's in her 70s. It's not their fault. We were a close-knit family. I never thought I'd have this in my family. I know my mom and dad.
Well, Michael, you were a close-knit family until that kind of money came on the scene.
Exactly.
One of the advantages I have over you as a lifelong shrink is that I am not really all that shocked by what people are capable of doing. You say to yourself, I never would have thought my sister would do something like this. Just to simply go ahead and grab this land and sell it for everything she can get for it. I would say, well, up to this point, your sister didn't seem capable of something like that because she was never put into a situation like this.
And also, to interrupt you quickly, I thought once we caught them red-handed and showed them the affidavit that they committed fraud, she would have maybe apologized and said, okay, we'll split it every which way. But they doubled down. They basically told us all go pound salt. So she just alienated my sister, me, my older sister's kids, and my kids all over $500,000.
Well, that's half a million's enough money for a lot of people to put up with ill will.
If you were the younger brother... Yeah. I have one choice, either let it go or or put a monkey wrench into their plans. But a police charge is a lot more serious than civil because it means criminal records. It means arrests.
You got a decision to make, and the decision is, do I want to press criminal charges against my sister, which won't result in jail time likely, but some kind of probation or fine or whatever, and it will be a complete total alienation for the rest of your life and her life from each other. You can probably count on that. Or you can say, I'm going to come up with the 20 grand because I'm going to take this as a civil suit and I'll recoup the money when we sell the land. I'll give her share. Everybody else gets their share. I think she saw, I don't know, I can't guess her motive. But from what you're describing, it sounds like she saw a chance to make a whole lot of money. And she thought, hey, we paid the tax on that in all those years and nobody else did. So that just gives us a leg up. You got a decision to make. I'm not saying one way's right, one way's wrong. It's something you decide. If it were me, I'd probably go the civil route. And I'd figure out a way to get the money knowing that I'm going to get it back when we iron this out. But the other thing is, you're going to have to forgive her. And that'll be easier if you're not shocked by somebody yielding to the temptation of making a $500,000. A spouse will be sitting in my office whose spouse is threatening to leave the marriage because he or she has met another person. This is an complete shock. Nothing even remotely expected. One of the more standard things they say is, this is not who they are. This is just not who they are. And you could hear that coming through with Michael. We were a close family. Translation, unspoken. This is not who my sister is. Well, it is who his sister is when put in this situation with that kind of temptation. Same thing with a spouse. It is who he is when he allowed himself to get pulled into a relationship, either a little bit at a time or all at once, that was outside his marriage. Had that particular woman not been at work or that particular woman not been in his life, then he may have continued to go on being just who he is. But sometimes I ask, if that's not who he is, who is it? See, I think partly what they're saying is something is making them act so totally out of character. Behavior is very contextual. And by that I mean, it is highly influenced by who we are around, when, and what circumstances come before us. I remember a detective talking on an interview, and he was asked, who hurts people like this? And he said, you do. I do. We do. What he meant was, and he had a jaundiced view of life, I'm sure, but what he meant was certain circumstances that are totally out of the normal shred of existence for most people can be an occasion of significant out of character, sinful conduct. Not an excuse. Kind of explains it, because see, we expect people to act consistently, and that's one sign of a moral human being, that you are consistent across most all situations in your moral conduct. But if you're not tested, you can appear one way, but when the big test comes, like in this case, a whole lot of money dangled in front of her eyes, well, she just justified it and said, I paid the tax on that land, you people. I earned it.
What does the Catholic Catechism teach us about the Assumption of the Virgin Mary? The Church professes that she was assumed into heaven, body and soul, honored by her Lord and Son as Queen of all things. By her Assumption, she participates in Christ's resurrection and anticipates the resurrection of other Christians. She is a preeminent and wholly unique member of the Church as a result of her total obedience to the Father's will and her Son's redemptive work. Thus, she is the Church's model of charity and faith. According to the Catechism, Mary's motherhood in the order of grace continues in heaven. What began with her ascent to the Annunciation continued till she stood under the cross and will not cease until the eternal fulfillment of all the elect. She is involved in the Church as advocate, helper, mediatrix, and benefactor. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
John 14. This is Jesus in the upper room with the disciples before he's going out to his sacrifice of himself for our salvation. And Philip says to the Lord, "Show us the Father, and we'll be satisfied." Jesus looks at Philip and says, "Philip, have I been with you all this time? Don't you understand? When you see me, you're looking at the Father." In fact, only two people throughout human history have given rise to the question, not who is he, but what is he? The two people are Buddha and Jesus. Buddha's answer was, don't come to me, don't look to me, look to my doctrine, look to what I teach. Jesus's answer was, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble of heart. Jesus is explicitly claiming to be God.
I had a linguistic professor. We were in grad school, and he said that he believed that one of the main differences between lower animals and humans, if not the difference, was language. And I remember raising my hand and saying, that may be true, but I think another one is that we're not afraid of vacuum cleaners. My Rottweiler, that vacuum cleaner, that makes her just go crazy. I know what it is. Anyway, thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. This is Look Back Friday. Got some calls up there from previous programs that, well, at the time of the call, I knew there were directions I wanted to go, but sometimes when the people describe circumstances and then they go off in a different direction, the direction I wanted to go was no longer relevant, but it would be relevant in the future. And so that call is set aside so I can talk about it. Let's see what we got that time. Yeah, let's go to Ron, who this is a common scenario. He's losing friends because of his Catholic faith.
I've had friendships for, with no exaggeration, from 30 years all the way up to like 47 years. And I've had to walk away from people after all that time that I've known dominantly pretty much all my life. And what I talk to them about Christ, about the Catholic Church. I know the families, they all were raised Catholic. And because of their decisions that they've made and the things I've gone through with them, I've had no alternative but to do what is best for me. And just recently, I've had to walk away from two friends. And just like
you
before,
say you had to walk away from two friends. Why did you have to walk away from two friends?
Because of their lifestyles.
Well, did their lifestyles affect you?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. When they were having problems, abuse and everything else like that, they would call me and I'd go over the house and I'd break up the whatever was going on at the time.
Okay.
and had to deal with the situation. The primary people that were involved were the most close people to me. And after years and years and years of going through the exact same thing and trying to talk to these individuals, they
were not willing. Well, you gave it an effort, Ron. So why is that? Why is that bothering you? You sound like
because I miss them. Because you know what?
Well,
the only thing I want them to do is, you know,
you can want them to do all kinds of things. You can want them to live better. You can want them to pay attention to God. But if they don't. Do you remember what our Lord said when he sent out the disciples two by two, what he told them?
Yes.
Yeah. If they don't listen to you, shake the dust off your feet. What he was saying is you can do what you can to speak with them, and we're assuming that you speak gently and easy to listen to, but if they decide, that's it, man, I'm my life's gone in this direction, Ron, and nothing you say or do is really going to help much, and I don't like this Catholic thing, what are you going to do?
There's nothing I can do.
Right.
You know, but I think that's what bothers me the most is that I care so much about them. Like I said, I'm not a saint. But why can I grasp the concept that it's Jesus? It's God. And the people that I know just refuse to accept that. Except for the fact that, you know, I think there's, and again, I'm not very versed anymore. I think Christ said something on the lines of those that will hear or something like that. Or
let him who has ears to hear. The reality here, Ron, is we live in a culture that is moving rapidly away from God, especially the young people. So someone who embraces the faith and believes that it is the very center of existence is going to find less people that agrees with them, less people that wants to hear anything about any of that. I think it's safe to say that once I go outside my close circle of family and friends, most of the people that I associate with do not believe like I do. And I still associate with them. I still enjoy them. I've got friends who are atheists. I've got relatives. Many of my relatives are either atheists or, kind of deciding what God means and what church means, and it's all in their definition. So I treat them as best I can, but I know that they really don't want to hear anything I might have to say about any of that. That's the reality, my friend. And you can cling to it, and you can say, isn't it awful? Isn't it terrible? I have no peace because of it. You can do that, but if you do that, all you're doing is making yourself miserable. That's all. I think the key here, and I didn't have a chance to get into this in the detail that I wanted, there's a difference between their behavior directly affects me, their lifestyle. Every time we have a family gathering, they just drink and drink and drink. Or I'll go there and pretty soon out comes the movies that I would never watch. Or their interests and the kind of things they want to do, they want to go to certain concerts that I wouldn't go within 20 miles of. That directly impacts you and how you want to live. But let's just say that they are folks who approach life and God very differently, but for the most part, that doesn't impact you. I hang with a lot of different groups. I hang with softball players, and I hang with, in the professional circles I used to travel in, many of them, just religion was just not any part of their existence. And in many respects, because of that, their political views, their marital views were very different from my own. And I associated with them at work, or they were family members. They were people that were in my life. They weren't people that would be easy for me, or maybe not even right for me to walk away from. And so I recognize that indeed, they don't think about this like I do. in many respects, what has happened to me as I've gotten older is rather than being frustrated with them, I feel bad for them. I find myself asking the Lord more and more, why do I know what I know and they don't? Why do I see what I see and they don't? And I see that as an unbelievable gift that he has given me, and for whatever the reason, they didn't accept that gift or take advantage of it or even have the opportunity for that gift. So it softens me toward them. It truly does. I look at them and I think, oh, if you only knew, if you only could embrace what this really is all about. And I feel very, very bad, very, very bad for them. And that helps me not be so frustrated with them.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
We are given many gifts. Everyone is different. And yet when we embrace them, when we accept our gifts and use them as God wants them to be used, his will, not ours, those crosses turn into gifts from which we can learn, grow, and who knows, maybe have an entirely different life than what we planned. Such as the case with me. I never in a million years expected to be in Catholic radio. Never even knew it existed. So the next time you're questioning or struggling, say, okay, God, what can I do with this? What am I supposed to do? Don't bury it. Don't put God in a box and see what he does with that gift, which sometimes comes in the shape of a cross.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. We get what we look for. St. Therese of Lisieux has an interesting insight on this. Once in a discussion over the possibility of avoiding purgatory, the future saint told another member of her community, Sister Maria Febronia, that God was more father than judge. And in this discussion, debate, she finally took the liberty of saying to the other sister, "If you look for the justice of God, you will get it. The soul will receive from God exactly what she desires." Are we full of wounds and anger and hurt, and do we want to inflict that on other people? Are we allowing God to heal us? If we receive his mercy, we have to show it to others. The Beatitudes are the heart of Jesus' message. Let's be transformed by them. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
Thank you so much for joining me here on The Doctor's Inn. This is Look Back Friday. Let's go to a previous call, an anonymous mail. Well, actually, I don't know if it's mail or not. There seems to be some confusion because it says Anon and then M and then Ma. So it's a male Ma? Or, okay, Massachusetts. Anonymous mail caller from Massachusetts whose wife, who is making the D word part of their conversation?
So me and my wife, we've been married for about, well, it'll be 3 years come July. But during our marriage, we've had a few certain hiccups, and a lot of it stems from a myriad of different issues. I mean, my wife, she can be a great person, but at the same time, she can be a very difficult person, very hard-headed, feeling that her opinion is right, and if you have an alternative opinion, then you can get stuffed. But what happened was a couple months ago, I had lost my job, and of course, I was trying to find a new job, and we've been arguing back and forth of what kind of job I should take. And next you know, we had another argument over how I was handling our daughter, who's a toddler, And to be frank, I didn't do anything to harm her. She just perceived it as me harming her, and so I was kicked out of the house, and I stayed with my folks, whom she doesn't have a high opinion of. And then while I was staying in my house, she sends me a text message saying, "Hey, I want a divorce," and I'm like saying, "No, we can't divorce," because she had converted to the faith from Protestantism, and we were told, of course, in pre-cana classes that divorce is absolutely out of the question. But she's like, but in the back and forth, she was like, I don't care, I want a divorce. But luckily, after some prayer, talking with our priest, it was just me talking with the priest, that she kind of calmed down, and we're living together again. But I just have this feeling that I'm walking on eggshells now, because it's like, what's the next thing that's going to set her off, to set her on this path to wanting to use the nuclear option? I try to pray for patience. I try to ask for the intercession of certain saints, like Blessed Karl of Austria, who had a very good marriage, St. Edward the Confessor of England, because he helped couples who were on the verge of separation in his time. But I try to pray for patience, but sometimes she just knows how to get under my skin, and she doesn't refrain from using low blows. So, Doctor, I was just wondering, what are some good techniques or advice you could give me on how to handle my wife?
You say that you feel like you're walking on eggs. Most likely you are walking on eggs. If, in fact, her reaction to you disciplining your toddler in some way that she wouldn't approve of, even though not abusively, just a difference, that she kicks you out of the house, which I don't understand how she could do that, but apparently she did, that tells you that there is a undercurrent with her of severe dissatisfaction in this marriage. And whatever it is, it's pushing her always on the edge of, I want out. I want out. I'm going to get out of here. I want out. This is not what I thought it was. I think you might want to ask her about that. You might want to say, you know, you threatened divorce. Is that what you really want? Do you want our little one to grow up in two separate houses? Do you want to threaten divorce every time we have a disagreement? Well, if you can't straighten up, yes, I do. I mean, I don't expect her to say, no, I don't. I'm just reacting emotionally. I expect her to immediately defend herself. You don't have to
check. That's typically how it goes.
Yes. You don't have to challenge it. You don't have to say, well, then quit saying it. You don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But you can say, when you say this, is it truly what you mean and what you want? Or is it something that you say out of frustration? I just want to know. Now, here's the other thing. This is kind of unrelated. Maybe I'll deal with it down the road in a look back. I see spouses who convert to the Catholic Church because of marriage. And in a certain percentage of those, they don't really embrace the faith. They're just doing it because it's what they need to do. I don't know if that's your case. But it sounds...
I think you hit the nail on the head, Dr. Ray. It seemed like she was very enthusiastic at first, but over time, after we got married, I mean, she considers herself Catholic, but sort of more on the fallen away, sort of ritualistic Catholic. Another way I put it is like a sort of John F. Kennedy Catholic. In other words, I call myself that, but I don't let it affect my private life, which she doesn't really let.
And that probably makes it more likely that she's willing to threaten divorce, because for her, divorce is not part, or what's the commitment in marriage is not necessarily a part of her Catholic faith. Here's what I would also suggest, besides just simply honestly asking her, is that what you want, and is that what you will say when we get in arguments? Recognize the triggers for her to go sky high with her emotions. You know what they are now. You've been married 3 years. You know the kinds of things you can say. You know the kinds of ways you can argue that will set her off. So therefore, you back away from them. If she says, you do this, instead of saying, I do not, what about you? You know, you accuse me of that, but then you turn around. Don't watch that. Just simply say, tell me how I do that. Give me an example of when I do that. In other words, you're trying to diffuse her. Because if you sit there and you argue back, you ain't going to win, pal. You know, when I heard that he disciplined his little daughter in a way that she made him leave the house. Now, I don't know what he did. I can't say. But more often than not, when you have somebody that comes across reasonably level-headed, like he did, it was probably a difference in discipline style. Maybe he swatted her bottom, okay? Maybe he picked her up and carried her somewhere, and she just didn't like that. She didn't like that at all, the mom. But it's one thing to be unhappy with what the spouse did. It's quite another to say, get out of the house. If they were in my office, I would really ask why that reaction. When you have somebody reacting pretty much that it appears all out of proportion, way out of proportion, leave this house. Something's going on. Something's really going on. And my guess would be that she's fighting discontent. There's a part of her that wants out. But for whatever the reason, she's clinging by a thread. He also said something else kind of significant. She doesn't like his parents. Now, again, I don't know nothing. I know nothing about his parents. But in these marriages where divorce is looming because one spouse thinks, I don't like it here. I don't like you. I don't like your family. That is really dangerous turf. Really dangerous turf. So, the question is, how does he battle with her less? Because I suspect that anytime he tries to defend himself, anytime he tries to offer his perspective, it leads to a fight. Now, one might say, but wait a minute, how do you communicate then? You know, if you can't share how you feel or how you're thinking about something or how you see it, what kind of relationship are you going to have? Well, I think maybe he right now has to be a little more cautious about doing that. That does not mean that's a style for the rest of the marriage, because I don't know how long the marriage is going to last, but if for the moment. The other thing, and I said I was going to comment on this, sometimes what I see, and I've seen this in marriage counseling, where the spouse converts to Catholicism. Why? Well, because it's very important to the person they're going to marry. Got it. The motive in the conversion is not necessarily so much, I really want to embrace Catholicism because I think it's a beautiful way to live and I think it's the truth. The motive is, well, all right, I can do this if we're going to get married. Because the question becomes, would the person have done it without the marriage? And probably not. That then becomes a source of resentment. I did something for you that, as time passes, I really regret that I did it. Or as time passes, I'm not into this as much as you are. Or as time passes, you bullied me into this. Whatever it is about that. And he said, initially it seemed like she was very enthusiastic. Okay, good. That's a good sign. Something in a very short period of time. I mean, it's only been 3 years and they're already having severe marital problems. Something seemed to me to be possibly a little out of kilter at the get-go. And again, it's not therapy. I can't probe to what that might be. But it's going to be interesting because I think he has to approach her at the very least asking so often why she's on the edge of divorce. To ask her things like, well, every time we disagree, do you want to leave? And then what would that do? We would have mixed custody. See how she answers. Dr. Ray.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
My daughter told me she was published in a scientific journal as an undergrad. I'm so proud of her. The world needs Catholic physicists, and my daughter's going to be one of them.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
Maybe you've been hearing a lot about the need to make a spiritual communion while participating from home in a live-streamed or broadcast Mass. There's more to it than reciting the act of spiritual communion. We should begin by having sincere repentance for our sins and affirming our belief that Christ's death redeemed us. Next, we call to mind the spiritual gifts found in Christ's sacrifice and thank God earnestly for them. Now we are disposed to pray the traditional prayer of spiritual communion. Jesus, I embrace you and unite myself wholly to you.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Time to take another call, so let me comment a little bit on Dump the D Word. I wrote a book called Simple Steps to a Stronger Marriage, and in the book, I talked about 10 things you can do that will radically have a reverberating effect for the better in your marriage. And then I spent about 70-80% of each chapter talking about why you don't do them. Why you resist doing them, why you fight doing them. I think chapter number 7 is Dump the D Word. Now, divorce is the big club. And it comes in various iterations. Well, you know, maybe we just weren't meant to be together. If you're that unhappy, then we'll do something about it. If it pokes its head into an argument, even though that's not really what a person wants, once that door is cracked open a little bit, it starts to become an option. If it's not going to be an option, don't use it as any kind of club. Some people will say, well, I have to threaten that because that's the only way I'm going to get him to listen or her to listen. That's it. I mean, everything I've tried up to that, they have to realize, okay, I'm unhappy, and let me use that word to show them how unhappy I am. But if you do that, there's a couple things. One is that what you mean? You're saying something you don't mean. Two, if you say it a few times, what you do is you evoke a reflexive reaction. Well, maybe you're right. Maybe that's what we ought to do. You keep throwing that up. You keep saying it. So maybe we just ought to follow through with it. Now you've got the other person thinking it. Is that what you want? it doesn't do anything. It's kind of like the parent who says, I have to get really mad and I have to scream, and then he listens. Well, yeah, what you did is you trained him that you have to bring out your nuclear warhead to get him to respond. And that's what the D word is. It's a nuclear warhead. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In on this Look Back Friday. Good Lord permit, and I'll see you on Monday, on E-Person Monday. Got a lot of variants, but hopefully none of these variants are harmful. Walk with God.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.